Hi, and welcome to the Just Riding Along show.
Hello, and welcome to episode 239. Tonight's show is brought to you by either Terrible Box Wine or Gatorade Surprise. Both of those will be covered.
It was actually Scratch Labs, but, you know, Gatorade's easier to type in a text message.
Got it. I don't really have much in the way of updates other than just whirlwind of a week. I drove to Grand Junction on Saturday. There is a dealer, Teddy Morris Power Sports, in Grand Junction. Call Bill if you need yourself a gas trials bike. They've got them, and they've got them on sale.
Wait a hot second here.
What?
You're telling me you drove your ass like 5 minutes away from where I was, and you bought a motorcycle.
I told you should have camped out. And like,
and then you just turned around and went home?
Kenny, that motorcycle's not rideable yet. So yes, I brought it home.
Heavily disagree.
Okay, well, I don't have all the things.
I mean, you could have ridden it. It would have started in Grand Junction. It's not jetted for here, so it won't. It just shoots gasoline out the exhaust when you try to start it.
That's not the problem. The problem is, the jetting is one thing. I don't have fork guards. I don't have breakaway levers. I don't, or foldaway levers. I don't have real bar end plugs. I don't have
just
everything.
Gonna, like, ride Slick Rock, you'd be fine.
Look, if there's anything that I know about myself, is that I would look at a rock and be like, yeah, I can ride that. And then boom, I've got a scratch in my stanchion. So yes, I got really close, but I didn't come to you.
Yeah, I'm happy for you, but I'm very disappointed.
I will explain off-air the haste of my trip off-air. It'll make more sense, I promise. So,
gotcha.
Just weird way of the world. Had a customer called us. They bought a bike over the phone. They live in Grand Junction. So I dropped off a bicycle in Grand Junction. I went to Teddy Morris Power Sports, and I got myself a 2025 TXT Racing 250, which is pretty much the exact bike I have now, just 12 years newer, 13 years newer.
Trials bikes, two-stroke 250s? I thought some of them were maybe like 300s or 350s even.
They do four-stroke stuff. I don't know if Gas makes a four-stroke. They do 300s. They're just not required for how I ride.
Okay.
So the 250 makes a, or the 300 has a good bit more torque down low, and it does make more power. You know, it's got 50 more cc's to make the horse torques with, but I've never been in a situation where I didn't ride something because I didn't have enough power. It's always been a skills and commitment issue, so I just went with another 250.
What's the most popular gas trials bike? Is it generally a 250 two-stroke?
I would guess 250 two-strokes are really pretty popular.
Okay. Like in the Enduro world, 300 two-stroke. Now, granted, these are totally different genre motorcycles, different frames, different engines, different power curves, very, very different machines. But like in the Enduro world, clearly the 300 two-strokes are like the go-to standard. Mm-hmm. But in the trials world, is it common to see 250s?
I thought you meant to see 300s.
My bad.
You see a lot of 250 trials bikes. It's ubiquitous.
Is it the ubiquitous, like just like a 300 two-stroke would be in the Enduro world?
Yep, it really is.
Okay,
so,
cool.
I mean, some people ride four-strokes. That's fine. They can be wrong. But, So, drove over, dropped off a bicycle, picked up a check, went to the motorcycle dealer, picked up a motorcycle, dropped off a check, drove home, and then I...
Taco is mad.
Taco's mad at something.
I bet the cat's meowing at the gate. Hold on. Well, you keep talking.
And then on... I have no idea what I did on Sunday. I just straight up cannot remember. Like, zero. I don't know what happened to Sunday.
I can tell what you could have been doing on Sunday.
Well, again, it'll make sense later. Monday, I got up, went over to the old Colorado Springs, and played 18 holes of disc golf, and did some trials riding on private property at a friend's house. So that was pretty cool. And the weirdest thing happened, and I promise, it's not on any drugs of any kind. I saw a red fox, and I swear it was carrying a hot dog. This fox was in the middle of nowhere, in the middle of the road, carrying a hot dog. And
yeah, I mean, he found that thing. It was like, shit, I need to bring this hot dog back home. And he was just going back home.
I know, but like, where did the hot dog come from? I have so many questions about this hot dog.
I mean, hot dogs are everywhere.
Okay. I've never noticed the hot dog trees, but anyways.
Ran to Costco.
Okay. Yeah, was it like a twice as large as normal Costco hot dog?
It was not. And I also don't know where the fox would have gotten $1.50, so.
I mean, they're crafty.
Anyways, yeah, so, but when I rode on Monday, I rode the old bike, because the new bike, again, doesn't have any protection, not jetted for altitude yet. It was really just like my KTM. It was an opportunity buy. The price was right, and I went and bought it and brought it home, and I'm in no rush to, oh, I know what I did on Sunday. We went out and worked on the Nationals for Turkey Rock Nationals this year, and then on Monday I went and rode trials bikes, so yeah, and played disc golf, and I got a par three. I did a 3-3. That was pretty good. I was pretty stoked. I don't know that I would want to play a ton more disc golf. It was the first time I've played. It won't be the last, but it won't be like a weekly thing, but it was fun. Yeah, that's what I got. Kenny's turn, go.
I went to Moab.
And then?
So a couple of buddies on ADV bikes were doing one was a new ADV bike, and the other one is a relatively new ADV bike to said people. So they were anxious to go try them out, get all the gear going, all that kind of stuff. And they mentioned they were going to Moab, and I was like, yo, I'll go with you, but I'm not going to ADV. I'll just drive down there and camp and hang out, and then we can kind of go our separate ways. So that's what we did. I met him down there, camped. It was cool. We were in a interesting spot. Moab is, I'm just so spoiled. I don't like paying for camping spots, and I don't want to be in like a campsite with like other people around. And that's kind of what we had to do. It was a little bit further away campsite than normal, but there was still a decent amount of people. It wasn't like raucous or anything, but like, you know, I'm used to just camping literally in the middle of nowhere and there's nobody around, maybe one other person, and that's kind of nice. So, yeah, Moab just has a lot of people. It can be fun because you see a lot of cool stuff. You see really cool off-road vehicles, bunch of motorcycle people, bunch of mountain bikers, just people out there having a good time, which is fun. Yeah. So met him out there, had a decent time, got to try out the old bed tent for the second time, third time, fourth time. I don't know, something like that. And it's okay. It's a pretty decent setup. It got crazy windy. There was no weather in the area, like perfectly clear sky. You could see all the stars and it was perfectly chill. We had a campfire, chilled out, went to bed at like reasonable time, 10 p.m. and it was super still out. And then at like 1 a.m., it was just 40 mile an hour winds. And I thought my truck was going to tip over. It was absolutely insane. Like I was waiting for the bed tent to get ripped off of the ridgeline with me in it and just go off of the cliff that we were next to and plummet to my death like 1,000 feet. So a little disconcerting, but yeah, decent setup. What did I do? I think that day when I got there, I rode some of the 4x4 trails. I rode some of the famous stuff, Fins and Things and Porcupine Rim 4x4, I believe is what it's called. It was pretty cool. Definitely some techie moves in there, but overall pretty fun on the moto. And then day two, my buddies departed and did their, they had like a super long route on the way down there and then a super long route on the way home that was super scenic and do all the stuff out there. So they probably logged, I say as the crow flies, it's like 200 miles maybe to Moab or somewhere in that ballpark, but they did like 400 miles there, 400 miles back, or 500, some pretty big trip. So in the morning, they kind of did their thing. We rode out to the entrance because I camped way up high on Sand Flats Road, if people are curious. And I rode back down to kind of the entrance of Sand Flats and I'd never brought the moto to Moab before, so I wanted to try slick rock on a moto since it's legal to ride slick rock on a moto, which is really cool. And you can ride like the mountain bike slick rock on a moto.
And well, there's only one slick rock. It just happens to be open to motos and bikes.
That's correct, yes. And it kind of intersects with the really famous Hell's Revenge 4x4 track as well.
Did you go do some spectating?
No, I watched a couple things. It was kind of cool, and I rode a little bit of that, like, off of the normal trail. But I rode the, like, practice loop for slick rock and then rode slick rock proper. So I think a total of it's, like, I don't know, 12 or 13 miles is definitely – it's way longer than you might think. And for those that have ridden it on a bicycle, it's, like, it's not that great on a bicycle, I don't think. It's got cool sections, and it's so unique that I think it's a bucket list thing for a lot of people. I totally get it. I think you should definitely go try it. But with all the modern mountain biking out there with like awesome flow trails with like some jumps and just all the cool modern stuff that we have access to, this from like a whole experience and a flow situation is pretty terrible. Not that every trail has to flow, but there's a lot of hike a bike on this thing. Have you guys done slick rock proper?
Yes.
Okay. And what did you think about it on a
bicycle?
You know,
It's exactly like the first time I went to Moab, I rode with a group, with the 9250 group. This was in March of 2015. And we rode right past the entrance to it. And I'm like, oh, the slick rock trail. Like, are we not going to do that? Like, we just rode up Sand Flats Road to do Porcupine Rim.
Yeah.
And everyone was like, you know, it's one of those trails you do once to say that you've done it.
Yep.
And
yep.
Yeah, like the next time I went, I was by myself and I went and rode it. And I'm like, yeah, I don't want to ride that again.
Yeah, it's not like, could you fall over and maybe slide down a thing? Yeah, you could. If you suck at riding, would it be really scary? Yeah. But most of it, if you just need to go down a thing, for example, like you can go, most anyone with reasonable skill can go down any of that stuff. You just commit to it and you're fine. The problem is
you bottom out your suspension at the bottom.
Yeah. On a bicycle, pedaling up some of that shit is so, it's just so fucking steep and long and gnarly.
There's a lot of like off camber.
Yeah.
Where the rock there grips really well, but like if you just lose a wheel, like your bike just slides, you know, 5 to 10 feet down a rock. Like it's, I don't know. I didn't really enjoy it. I'm glad I did it. Like the views there are amazing. Like,
and you are literally doing it. You're on the fucking moon. There is nothing really in the world. It's so unique that I think everyone should go experience it. But as a whole, like a holistic riding experience, I don't think it's that great. So with that said, on an enduro motorcycle, fuck me, that's amazing. It was so fucking awesome. Absolutely A+++.
That seems like it would be scarier on the off-camber parts because
because you don't touch pegs.
Oh yeah. I think that's what got me. Like you lose some momentum and then all of a sudden you have to pedal and you hit a pedal on the rock uphill on the uphill side. Yeah.
I don't want to use the term easy. You need some amount of skill. But if you have some amount of experience on a dirt bike and you can just commit to doing this stuff, there's really nothing that's like hugely consequential. And the moto is literally built for that thing. All the shit that's steep, you just brop right up it. And it's super chill and super grippy and amazingly fun. I think I stopped and like looked around and stuff, sessioned a couple things. And I think I did the entire loop in 45 minutes. Whereas on a mountain bike, it's like 4 hours. So anyway, highly recommended on a moto.
I don't think it took 4 hours when I did it. It's maybe two, but it's not that long of a loop. It's just
the whole shebang with the practice loop, it's like 12 plus miles, I think.
Yeah. It just takes forever because it is so like tedious on the bicycle because it is so up, down, up, down, up, down, up, down. But on the moto, you just have like throttle, so I would love to ride it.
It is sick on the moto. And Matt, with your skill level, like you might not be that entertained, to be honest.
I don't know why you keep saying things like that. Like you keep saying my skill level. Like, dude, I'm not that good. So I don't
I don't know. I think you might be
good. You would probably have fun riding your trials bike on it.
Oh, yeah. I saw a couple of people with trials bikes on it. It would be great. You really don't need to go fast anywhere. You can. I think there were a few sections where I didn't need to do it, but there was just clear visibility, and I saw like a nice up-down, and I was like in the top of third. So, I mean, don't tell anyone they're that, because you're not like supposed to go that fast out there, I suppose. But definitely, you know, hit 40-plus miles an hour in places for small little stints, because it's just wide open. But most of it, I was in like low to middle part of second gear, just kind of diesel trucking around for the most part. So, moral of that story is Slick Rock is cool. It is iconic. At some point, you probably just need to go check it out, but don't expect it to be this amazing experience on the mountain bike. Doing something like Porcupine Rim would be way more rewarding, in my opinion, but it is really cool. And the flip side is, if you have a moto, holy shit, it is so good, in my opinion. Just that's my favorite style of riding, where it's not like incredibly technical. Like, you don't need to be able to like double blip to get over stuff. It's just some level of commitment, some level of flow, trust the motorcycle. It just goes, and it's just fun. So anyway, that was my weekend. It was great. Motorcycle was great. No issues. I do have a new exhaust on it. A long story, but it's a stock exhaust just with a new end cap, and it's great. Works awesome. So that was my week.
Yeah. All right. Well, my week, I've done a lot of work just trying to finish up my bedroom project. I took a day to go out and just do a little elk scouting in a place where I hadn't been before. And it was really, really cool. If you're ever like wanting to do just some off trail exploring, not on your mountain bike, on foot, you wouldn't want to do this on a mountain bike. If you look at a topographical map, you can kind of start to see like the places, like if you have elk around you, elk make really good trails. They tend to kind of follow the same path, and they're big animals. It's not that they don't go into some really gnarly places, because they absolutely will, but they tend to choose the easiest path through those places and around the really gnarly stuff. So like, if you can find an elk trail, then you found a trail that you could just about ride a mountain bike on. In a lot of places, you know, terrain dependent, they step over logs and stuff, you know, that stuff doesn't bother them, but like, they're really nice. And so like, if you can look at the map and find like these places that look a little easier as far as like how steep the terrain is and stuff, like if you can go to those spots, a lot of times you'll just find a trail that will go for miles. And that's exactly what I did. I hiked up this one trail. It's one of the trails off of Monarch Crest, but it's a hiking trail, and it's not super well kept. So it's really, you know, like you wouldn't even want to try to like poach it on a mountain bike. And I hiked up that to about, I was at almost 11,000 feet, and the snow started to get, you know, there's still some snow up high for sure. And, you know, I could tell like I was going to get to where I was going to post hole some if I didn't just go ahead and like kind of go back down. So I went up to about 11, went off the trail up onto this little kind of bench area of like the ridge on one side of this drainage, and just immediately found a trail. And it actually looked kind of like it had been a human trail at some point. And I mean, at some point, like a long fucking time ago. And the crazy thing about it was that it kept going like through these areas where it would go directly to, it would kind of go into a meadow, but in the meadow there might be a boulder, like a big boulder, like taller than your head, and it would go directly to that, and then there would be bones around it, and it was like three different spots. It was more than just a coincidence, because there weren't just bones all over the place. And this, like, some places you go to, and there's, like, it's obvious that there are, like, I don't know, a lot of mountain lions or just animals go there to die or something. And this wasn't really like that. But in these three very isolated spots, the trail just made a beeline for a boulder. Gigantic boulder. And there would be bones around it. And then it would just go, you know, like to the other side of the meadow and back off into the woods. And it's like, it looks almost like a trail that humans made and would like hunt, like ambush hunt from these boulders is kind of what it looked like. It was really, really weird. But I thought that was really cool. It's kind of the coolest thing I did all week. I did use my e-bike to go there. The trailhead is pretty gnarly to get to. I mean, I could definitely have driven my truck there, but it would have been so fucking slow. Especially, like, comparing speed on the way down. You know, it was faster on the e-bike to go up, and then on the way down, you know, it was way, way faster. So that was a big time saver, because it's, like, 3 miles from where the road starts to just be, like, kind of bumpy to, like, you'd better have four-wheel drive. And yeah, so I just parked in like the nice spot and rode up, hiked up this trail, did kind of a big loop and went back. I think I had a mountain lion following me at one point. I wasn't too far from the truck and I heard one. Like, they occasionally make this weird, like, not really a roar, kind of like a yowl kind of noise. I heard one. And it was in the distance. I didn't really think much of it. And I'm like, whatever. There's mountain lions out here. And then, like, the birds between where it sounded like that mountain lion was and where I was, like, I would just hear, like, bird alarm noises kind of getting closer to me. And that was, you know, a little concerning. And I did have I had a pistol with me, and I racked around and just yelled into the woods. I yelled, "Go away, cat," like, as loud as I could. And then just, like, no more birds. Like, it just, either it stopped and turned away, or, like, there weren't any birds and it was actually following me even closer. I don't know, but it didn't bother me. And, yeah, that was a little bit of excitement. But it was a really cool area. And I want to go back when there's a little less snow so I can get up higher and kind of explore. I went on the south-facing ridge. I want to explore the north side, but there was a lot more snow on the north side, or north-facing side. But fun stuff, along with working on my bedroom. That's about it for me. You want to talk new stuff, new shit?
Mm-hmm.
Kenny, are you guys a Cannondale dealer?
We are.
Have you seen the Motera, the new Motera?
Maybe. I feel bad. I should know all that stuff, but I got a lot of crap in my head.
Looks like
nothing strikes any memories there.
They just released this article is from May 11th, so a couple days ago. And it looks like exactly what I've been looking for, honestly. I mean, I don't really care that it's a Cannondale. It's got a normal fork. It doesn't have a lefty. It's a bike, you know? It's 29 front and rear, which I think is cool. It's got the Bosch motor in it that you can do their upgrade, like that over-the-air upgrade. Let's see. Comes in two travel versions. Regular, which is 150, and a long travel, which is 165.
So, like, what about it do you like?
It has a removable 800 watt hour battery.
And I'm just probing. Why do you want a removable battery?
Because I don't want to leave a battery out in the wintertime, like out in the garage where it's going to get, you know, like in the single digits at night.
Sure, fair enough.
So, yeah, like just to watch the battery life. And also, it's just easier to charge just to take it off the bike and bring it in the house. Yeah, pretty much just to take care of the battery a little better as far as cold weather. And
I just didn't know if you were trying to do like a multiple battery situation.
Nah, I mean, not necessarily. I mean, it wouldn't be out of the question. It is compatible with a range extender too, which is cool. But yeah, it's really just being able to take it off and like have it inside in the wintertime is the big thing, because, you know, I know that'll like kill your battery if it's just cold all the time. And I'm not going to bring a whole bike in the house because our house is really fucking small. And yeah. And also, well, and this may not be as big of a deal because it looks like this frame is reasonably light. But a lot of times if I'm going to put it in the back of my truck, I take the battery off just because it's easier for me to like get it in my truck because it's heavy.
Yeah, it's also reasonable.
But yeah, it's 20, and I like that it's a 29 rear wheel. Like, I know a lot of e-bikes are 27.5 only. Some of them are, you know, you can put a 29-inch wheel back there, but, you know, this one is 29.29, like, from the factory, which I like. And yeah, that's really what I'm looking for. I don't, you know, I don't have to have, like, this stupid high power motor. But, I mean, this one is, it's 750, which means it's legal everywhere, by definition. Well, legal wherever e-bikes are allowed, but yeah, so I mean, it's really exactly what I'm looking for.
Very cool.
Yeah. Might need you to look up a price on one of those for me.
Yeah, sure.
Kenny's like, retail plus 10%. All right. What else is new that you like?
Or if you had one in the store, if you could weigh one for me, that would be really cool. I'm guessing
get one. Maybe I just don't know about it because we haven't like gotten one in and built it yet. Or maybe we got it in and we just didn't build it. I don't know. But yes, as soon as we will definitely have some, and I am happy to weigh one for you.
Oh, and Matt, this has size-specific geometry, including chainstay length.
Fuck yeah. How long is the chainstay?
Let me find the geometry chart.
My God, it's out to 468 on the extra large. My God, I want one of those.
It's 460. It looks like an 8, but it's a 0 with a dot in the middle.
Still, that is...
And Andrea, you would do a medium?
Yeah, I'd do a medium.
Very cool. I will keep my eye out.
It says they took 1,000 grams off of the frame weight, and I was trying to Google... like what the previous one weighed. And
I'm
really
sure they added 1,000 grams to that battery, though.
Yeah, probably. It is. Yeah. The removable battery bikes are definitely heavier than the integrated ones.
And it's also a larger battery than previous.
Oh, yeah. I think I saw the previous one was like 650 or something, which is what I have now. But I know my bike has to be over 60 pounds. It's really freaking
heavy.
Wow,
that's crazy.
Well, and it's also an aluminum frame. So yeah, aluminum frame, removable battery, it's a heavy bitch. But if I could get in that, you know, 50-something pound range, I'd be pretty happy. All right. But yeah, we can keep moving.
I'll just start rattling off some random stuff from Bicycle Retailer. Woman files wrongful death suit against RadPower. After fire kills husband. That's pretty freaking serious.
Yeah, it is.
That was in January. What's crazy is that was a long time ago. I'm sure there, you know, lots of stuff has to happen to link 2 and 2. But it looks like this happened in January of 25.
Yeah.
But yeah, pretty crazy. That's not good. That is not good. I mean, I talked about it a very, very long time ago on the show, back when like Magic Shine Chinese bike lights were popular, and I owned some, and they had like that battery issue. Basically, know what you have and hopefully buy it from a reputable company. That doesn't guarantee that you won't have a problem. However, if you buy it from a reputable company, it's probably been more vetted, probably has better cells in it with better engineering around it. And yeah, be careful. Don't buy Chinese battery powered garbage. Don't buy the $100 to $200 hoverboard and leave that thing charging in your living room. It's a really bad idea.
Yeah.
And this I get it. RadPower was not full-blown China. It's not like the garbage that is all over Temu and Amazon and all that stuff. It's definitely a few steps up from that, but just goes to show you got to be really careful. And if you wonder why expensive battery powered stuff is expensive, that's why. Getting UL listed is extremely expensive, and all the other safeguards and everything around it are expensive. Running lithium cells from a reputable manufacturer like a Panasonic or Samsung, LG, et cetera, is expensive. And that's why. So be careful. Like, think about that stuff. think about your house, go through your house and like get rid of sketchy shit, because it really, really, really can happen. And especially with something the size of an e-bike battery, if that thing lets go, it's not like, oh, there's a little fire in the corner of my house. It's like a giant inferno fireball. And I don't think people understand how gnarly these things are when they light off. Like, I've lit off on purpose little RC car batteries that are 1/10 to 1/50 the size of one of these batteries. And when those things let off, is unreal how much heat and fire and everything they produce.
They call it thermal runaway.
Yeah. So that's, it's pretty crazy. Pretty crazy.
Yep.
Also bicycle retailer type stuff. Cube issues recall for sudden detaching pedal insert on carbon crank arms. So if you have a Cube, it's on Pink Bike for sure. Okay. I don't know if it's on Bicycle Retailer yet.
Gotcha. I didn't see it on Bicycle Retailer.
Well, I just mean type stuff. I mean, it's Pink Bike does do recall stuff, but normally we would find these on the old Bicycle Retailer. But the Cube Acid Carbon Hybrid Crank Arms, the pedal insert can, the product defect described here can result in the bond failing and increase the risk of accident, which can cause material damage and serious injuries. For user safety, all crank arms affected by this issue must be replaced. And if you have one of these, you're going to get a permanent solution in the way of some aluminum crank arms and deal with it.
That's a replacement?
Yep.
Wow, they're downgrading you and they're not like giving you any money?
You get a Cube front headlight as well.
Are you fucking serious?
Yeah.
I mean, they don't even like, won't even give you store credit? A la Specialized?
I don't know.
Jeez.
Says you're getting a front headlight, so.
It's crazy.
So, Fox factory bike sales are down 9% in the first quarter. New brands are disrupting the industry, but creating opportunities for products.
What new brands are disrupting the Fox's mountain bike business? I know they make more than forks, for example. I just, none come to mind.
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe don't make your standard fork $1,300. Just a thought.
It sounds like maybe less forks are being bought at OE is what I'm kind of reading between the lines here.
Well, I can see that, and I think I know why. And it's not tiny startup suspension companies. It starts with an S, and it rhymes with SRAM.
That's not how rhyming works, Kenny.
Does it sound the same as SRAM?
I don't think they make forks. Rhymed. I think you're thinking about a brand, something like Block Socks or Clock Talks or something like that. Also, I'm not going to do it now, but I want you to know the number of puns that you can make with Max's tire models is like, I was stocking tires the other day and I went through like 17 different tire models and all of my coworkers were nearly peeing / stabbing me at the same time. So
I would stab you.
No, it was really good.
And what we're getting at is after feeling the latest versions of the RockShox, I think the Zeb, the newest Zeb Lyric, et cetera, are better than they ever have been. They were never terrible in my opinion, but I never liked them enough that I would put one on my own bike. But even just parking lot testing the brand new Zeb, that could go on my bicycle. And I think other brands are realizing that, and they're speccing more and more RockShox stuff. So I think that is why, back to our previous topic, I think that's one of the big reasons why Fox is seeing a little bit of a decline in sales. That's my guess.
And, I mean, just one thing that I would say with Fox in general, they don't really, in my experience, believe in shop evaluated warranty issues. So if you have an issue, your product has to go back to Fox.
That's true.
And I can understand wanting to, let's say, control that process. And I know I'm going to use control now three times, but they want to control that process. They want to evaluate those problems in hand. They can see all kinds of things that the shop could be potentially covering up due to negligence or malice, and they have a higher quality control because their trained technicians are doing it all in-house, and I can respect all of that. However, if you bought a new bike with a Fox Fork today, like it shows up at your bike shop today, and you go out and ride it tomorrow, and the damper just shits the bed, well, you're not going to ride your bike for 2 months. It's just, you're not. And Fox gives zero priority anything to brand new bike owner. Like, you get a brand new bike, it's got a Fox on it, you're just in the queue. You're behind paid service, you're behind other warranty evaluation, you're just in the queue. And shop can't pay a rush fee, nothing you can do to get it done faster. So I know that people think that I'm a big shill for SRAM, Zip, RockShox, the whole family owned under the SRAM stuff, but like, you got some broken shit from SRAM? Guess what? Like, oh, your brand new damper, like the bladder split on it, shit, I'll put one in the mail and you're riding your bike again in a week. And if it does need to go in for service, never seen turnaround over like a week, week and a half with SRAM. And I just want Fox to understand that if you want to control that process, I would really really wish that they had a little bit more staffing. Because it seems like they run the same staff year-round, which I understand. You want to keep people employed year-round because they're highly trained suspension technicians. But also, like, you just can't be 8 weeks out in the peak season. And it's pretty ridiculous. So, you know, maybe you need more people. And maybe you need to start looking at things a little differently. Because if I were a brand manager and I wanted people to be happy with their new McCully Frameworks bicycle, I would not spec a Fox product for that simple reason. Like, I would hate for someone to buy, because shit happens, right? Everybody ships something that's kind of Bojangle every once in a while. And I'm going to knock on another company while we're at it. But, you know, Fox and RockShox, I don't want anyone that someone knows. I don't care how many units are in the field, but like, there's a shit ton of both. That's what's important. There's a shit ton of Fox, there's a shit ton of RockShox. And I wouldn't say that one has more problems than the other out of the box. Just, that's my from the hip feeling. But if I were a brand manager, I wouldn't want them to buy my bicycle and then just that fluke, you know, there's always going to be something fucked up, right? Like, it just happens. When you're doing that many units, something just happens. And if you spec that Fox product, then the customer can't ride the bike and it becomes your problem and it becomes your dealer's problem. And sometimes you have to just buy the customer a new fork so they don't return a bike that they wanted for a race that they bought and it came out of the box broken. And then you have a used fork just hanging in your shop. Like, that sucks a lot. So that's kind of my big gripe there. And the other company that I'm going to bash on with this is, you know, I was knocking on 5Dev because I saw a broken 5Dev recently. And somebody was like, like, you know, I've seen broken SRAM cranks. And I'm like, okay, how many? They're like, a couple. I'm like, okay. How many 5Dev cranks, or how many SRAM cranks per single 5Dev crank do you think are in the field? You know,
I've seen pictures of a lot of different broken 5Dev cranks, and there's only 10 5Dev cranks out there, and a bunch of them broke, so not good.
Yeah, and that's what I'm kind of getting at is, like, you know, it's not like we're talking, and with all this, I'm not saying, like, oh, Fox's stuff is always broken out of the box. That's not it at all. You know, it's going to be one in 5,000 units that something's just fucky with, because that's just the math, and that's going to be, you know, a Fox fork, a RockShox rear shock, whatever. You're just going to find something that just doesn't make sense. And it needs serviced by the factory. And it just needs to happen faster. And I just don't know why they put their riders in that situation, and I just don't enjoy it. So, yeah.
It is a little frustrating. I'm not saying that a Fox damper, for example, is inexpensive, but if they would just be more willing to, for example, like, hey, we're going to send you out a new damper. All you got to do is thread that bitch in the fork. Like, put the fork horizontal, unbolt the damn damper, all your oil stays in there, slap the new damper in, and you're good to go. Mail us back the old one. Then, boom, you just solved a lot of problems. Mm-hmm. And they're going to have to figure out something to do with that used damper. I don't know. Rebuild it, dyno it, test it, figure out what was wrong with it. And if you sign off that it's good, then put that back into your circulation of dampers you send out for other ones that fail in the future, right? Like, no big deal.
Yeah, because if you had a pre-owned damper and it had a new top cap for the tooling and then a new, like, top cap that you touch, you know, then who cares, right? Like, I had a bad damper that was used. I got now a different good damper, but it's just, you know, I have Model A damper that's bad. You send me a refurbished Model A damper that's also been in a fork and used. Who gives a shit? You know, it's been factory.
So I think Fox has ways of doing it. Not that not every problem is as simple as a damper, because a fork damper is about the simplest thing you could have. If it's a rear shock, probably not much you're going to do to fix it other than sending out a new rear shock. If it's air spring related or a CSU creak or whatever else, pretty much a new fork is the only thing that's going to solve it. The damper itself is the only modular, easy thing I can think of that it could be.
Yeah,
but I would say that's probably 50% of the problems out there on a fork.
Yeah, and like, we had a damper issue on a SID maybe earlier this year, and no shit, like 2 weeks later, we had another SID with the same issue. And I called SRAM. And I'm like, yo, check out this service order number. They're like, yeah, what about it? I'm like, check out this serial number I'm about to give you. I was like, are these forks out of the same batch? And the guy's like, ooh, this is getting interesting. And he like starts typing and he's like, what's going on? I'm like, the same thing. And he's like, no way. And we type and he types and he's like,
did he say that's the first time I've ever heard of that?
No.
Okay. That's good, because it was not the first time that he'd heard that.
No, I did have that with Fox this year. By the way,
don't ever tell me that as a bike company. If you ever tell me that's the first time I've heard of that, I know 100% without a doubt that you are full of shit.
The only time that's appropriate is when the eyelet on my Fox shock broke on my Pivot Mach 6 during that enduro in Denver.
Yeah, but that was also not the first time that they had seen that.
I can believe, like, when I heard that's the first, like, how and, like, just the bewilderment of, like, why is it broken? I don't believe you kind of thing. Like, it's like, yeah, I know. It's a wild one, but it's broken.
I mean, maybe what, like, a Fox Podium fork and the stanchions are on the top or something like that.
No, but like, maybe this that's guy, the first like, time we dug into it and he's like, cause the serial numbers were really close and they happen to be on different brand bikes. And that's where it like got really interesting to me, like really interesting. And I know that those forks came on those bicycles. You know, it's not like one was OE, one was aftermarket, yada, yada, yada. And we did some digging, and he's like, no, those weren't, he's like, I see what you're saying. They're really close, but they weren't in the same batch. And I was like, okay. I was like, cause this one's doing the exact same thing. And he's like, really? And like, he didn't give me the, we've never heard of that, you know, cause obviously I have another one. And it was like, And he's like, and he did say something much more believable. He's like, we don't see, and this isn't verbatim because it was a long time ago, but he's like, I just don't see this a lot. And you've got like two in a month. That's really weird. He's like,
I don't know. That sounds like a fancy version of
no
what I was saying.
So the tone and like, I feel like when someone says, I've never heard of that, they're usually like rolling their eyes and flipping off their computer screen. because I used to do remote customer support, so I kind of know that feeling. But, like, you know when you get someone on the phone and they're, like, into it, if that makes sense? They're like, ooh, hmm, ooh. Like,
I guess so. I don't know. Maybe they're genuinely a good person, or maybe they're a good actor. I don't know.
Maybe.
I'm too pessimistic to give you an accurate call. When I still call SRAM to this day, and I'm like, hey, I got this guide here with a bad lever, and they're like, oh, interesting. What's it doing? Well,
the thing. It's doing
the thing. It's doing the guide lever thing. Like, okay, interesting. We haven't heard of that before, but here's what we're going to do. It's like, God damn it. Stop it.
Well, wait, why are you still fucking with guides? Just sell them a new brake,
Kenny.
They're
still out there, and they're all broken.
They're old. Just sell them a new brake.
All right. We should move on.
No, my best one was I was told I haven't heard of that before by Fox. And I was like, well, I have three in for service that are doing the exact same thing. They were shipped together in one box. And that probably makes number 8 or 9 we've shipped in as a shop.
Yeah. So going full circle here, I think the lesson here is Fox could do a better job on timely warranty repairs and trusting the shops a little bit more. And I think Fox has also burned a few bridges with some bad products. It happens. I get it. But the X2 damage has been done, and they're still not super nice about replacing those things. And I get it. Most of those are pretty old now. But still, like, why can't you just admit we made a mistake? We're going to help the customer out. But they're not really helping out that much. I know they've replaced a lot of X2s, but those were, like, very broken on someone's bike who was 6 months old. And they also made some of the worst droppers in a very long time. Now, their newer stuff is better. And I think their latest line of forks seems to be pretty good from what I can tell. I think they made a few other missteps. I think what's the name of it? What's their standard damper on their standard fork? Like their standard trail damper. I'm just forgetting the name. It's a grip X, right?
Okay.
So the Grip X, that thing was hot garbage. And sure enough, they redesigned it. They didn't say that the old one was hot garbage. And they're like, oh, look at all the changes we made to it. It was like CTD all over again, basically. So they've made a few missteps. And they can do better.
They could.
All right. We talk about this new spot. Another on the list of bikes that I think look really cool. And I mean, I think I discussed this last show or one before that. Like, I'm in a place where, like, I could ride more, but I'm doing a lot of other stuff, and it doesn't really make sense for me to just drop a large amount of money on a new analog bike. I don't want to say analog bike, a new normal bike. And, this one is, if I was going to, though, it would probably be this one. It looks really cool. It's the Diggity 125. It's their short travel trail bike. And I like that they don't put any, they have no mention in here of it being at all like you could ride this in a cross-country race. It's not made to be a cross-country bike or even cross-country adjacent. It's 140 front, 125 rear. And it looks cool. I don't know. It's neat. And I was really surprised that it's not as expensive as I thought it would be for like the high end, like the highest end build is, I mean, it's right at $10,000, but like the same build on, I don't know, like more mainstream bikes is more expensive than that, which I was kind of surprised by, but it looks really neat. And it comes with, well, it doesn't come with it, but you can get a little custom frame bag that's made by a bag builder. It's made by JPAX, like in Denver, which I think is really cool that, you know, they're in Colorado. They're based out of Golden, Colorado, which is a suburb of Denver. And, you know, they're getting someone local to make this little custom bolt-in bag that goes under the little frame stiffener link thing in the front triangle. So, yeah, it looks like just a really cool bike. I don't know what else to say about it, but it's a, you know, like the weight's good on it for a trail bike, like a short travel trail bike. It's like really competitive. It's 28.5 pounds for a size large.
I'm a little bit... I'm not going to be rude. Never mind.
You can be rude. You're
hard for me to believe. Oh, it doesn't even have a fucking piggyback on it. No wonder it's light. Jesus Christ. Trail bikes need piggybacks.
Well, it looks like it has room for one if you wanted to upgrade.
So I should buy my cheap $10,000 pay to put a new shock on it? Fuck yourself. Not you. Just the industry in general.
Well, you can get the, like, the middle of the road build, which is GX axis. And let's see, alloy wheels. Yeah.
I just struggle to believe that that bike weighs what it weighs. Because I know what my Heihei that also has an inline shock, it's shorter travel, it's 130, 120, and it's just a mountain bike. It's not really built as a trail bike or an XC bike. It just is there, and yeah, I don't know.
It's possible that Spot made a lighter frame than Kona did.
It has more parts, though. Is the, like, that's, yeah, anyways. I'll just stop talking.
All right. Yeah, you should. You guys got anything else you see that's cool?
What about the Chinese component manufacturer L Twu?
I haven't seen that one.
L Twu. And they have stuff that looks suspiciously like Shimano and has a little seat tube battery, or seat post battery rather, that looks exactly like the Shimano. But then they also have a lot of stuff that looks exactly like SRAM. It's pretty interesting. There's going to be a lot of this stuff. I think the Chinese, like they have always done, will find ways to copy stuff and probably get pretty darn close. But eventually, people are going to make competitive stuff kind of on their own, a la a Suron.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Dude. Is that what I think it is?
What?
I haven't figured it out yet. I'm pretty sure that they built a flat mount brake and then they just bastardized it and made it into a post mount brake.
It really looks like
probably
that.
One of the ugliest brake calipers I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, that's pretty bad.
Or that might be
a front
caliper.
Are you talking
about
the quad piston mountain one? That looks normal to me.
No, the BR-4.
That's like a road one, isn't it?
R04A dash. Oh, it is a front direct mount. That's what it is. It's just a really ugly. Hold on, Kenny. Let me use my technology here.
He texted it to you.
You got it.
Holy shit, that is straight up a pod controller. I just went to mountain bike stuff. That is a pod controller, and
those are some old Shimano brakes.
Those are some old Shimano brakes with a not... Oh my god, that is straight up an Axis rear derailleur.
Pretty crazy, huh?
Yeah. How much does this stuff cost? I mean...
I don't know.
Money?
I don't know. Oh wow, yeah, that is a, that's a weird looking brake. I actually really like the way that looks. Maybe I'm weird.
All right, we want to go to some listener. Got a couple of listener questions.
Yeah, I think that's all I got.
All right. We got one from, this is a moto one, from Mona Lott. I was listening to a recent show where you were talking about pedal kickback, and that made me think of something I feel while descending or hitting obstacles while not under throttle on my moto. If I know I'm about to hit drops, roots, rocks, etc., I pull the clutch while I'm standing, and the suspension seems to work better or more naturally. I'm guessing because it's not under load and moving freely. Is this a known phenomenon, or do you guys ever feel this effect, or is it in my head?
Nope, not in your head. Totally real, and you're exactly correct. It is because there is chain growth on a moto.
Yes.
That's why. Because your counter countershaft sprocket is not concentric with your rear pivot.
Yeah, and the other thing that I would say there too, that's probably playing into this, that might not be as much of a thing on the bicycle, when you're clutch in, like hitting that bump could also change, like while under throttle, could change throttle position as the bike moves and you move with it. So I think that it's probably some of what Kenny's talking about, which is very logical and true. And then I would also say there's less rider throttle input. And yeah, I don't know.
I notice it a lot under throttle climbing techie stuff. The suspension will feel very different depending on the throttle that you're giving it. For lots of reasons. One, I mean, it's physically, you're shifting weight and everything, but also it's just tightening up that entire drivetrain and it affects the pivot. And that's why I noticed it way less / zero on the Ultra B, because its drivetrain is concentric with the pivot, which is very unlike a gas motorcycle.
Ain't that some shit?
Ain't that some shit? I think there are some, I don't know enough about it, but I think there are actually some positives for having the motorcycle the way it is. And I don't know what they are, but I'm fairly certain there are.
I mean, I'm sure it's just like
positives.
Mountain bikes with anti-squat and stuff like that, right? Like, because
yeah.
If a moto didn't have anti-squat when you pulled the throttle, it wouldn't pull a wheelie. It would just suck the fender down to the rear wheel.
And I think that's a big reason why. I think that's exactly right. I think the compromise they made in the suspension, I think Matt nailed it, if I'm not mistaken, is, yeah, if you have a unbelievably torquey two-stroke 300 and you just give it some gas in first, the thing would just like lay all the way into its travel if it didn't bind up a tiny bit in the suspension, essentially.
Makes sense.
So I think they're balancing those two things.
All right.
So yes, listener, you are not imagining things.
I have one other new thing that we should probably cover before we do the next listener question that I just remembered. Fozwa. No more.
Are you sure? Or just Porsche bikes?
Well, that includes Fozwa and Grape? I don't know. I've never heard of that one.
But Fozwa is gone?
I mean, Porsche fully acquired Fozwa in 2022. And yeah, like now every brand is for sale. They're selling off, Porsche is selling off everything that's not Porsche branded. And they're going to focus on Porsche. So.
Yeah. That is interesting.
Yep.
Well, I mean, the cool thing is they never made a good product, so it's really not a problem.
Okay.
Listen. All right, I'm going to read this last listener question, and I like this one. This is from Mothman at the NSA. And I'm going to go ahead and give out their email, because I don't know if this is a real email address or not. Email is kennyssecretmothchild@theothersecretgovernment.com. So, and that, yeah, so I kind of think that's a fake email, but the message is, oh, Andrea, got any good conspiracy theories you want to talk about? And I do.
Hold on. Kenny, while she's running through that, will you pull up your next driving lesson?
Sure.
Okay, thank you.
So, yeah, and I noticed this when I was on the road to my parents' house in Memphis. And I just kind of forgot about it until I read this email. So, I don't know if anyone else has noticed, but a lot of states are switching to a dark-colored license plate with white letters. I mean, I noticed like Oklahoma, Tennessee, Colorado, Texas, all the states I drove through, you can see these new license plates that are dark colors with white letters. And I think that change is happening so that flock cameras and other traffic monitoring devices can better take pictures of your license plate.
Yeah, I'm not a conspiracy theory person at all, but I think that's pretty reasonable.
So, yes, that is my latest conspiracy theory that I've thought about. I mean, I kind of think of, like, little ones all the time, but that's, like, one that, yeah, that's definitely, like, a big one that I think is pretty plausible and probably accurate. But, yeah, so if you have the option, don't do it. You know, make them work. Make them make their cameras better and spend more money.
So, there is a Reddit, or there's a subreddit called Low Stakes Conspiracies. Let's see. There's some really good ones. I don't
know. Gravy packed in cardboard will shorten the shelf life.
Yeah, that or like, there's a really good one. David Attenborough is actually God, and he got fed up with people not noticing the amazing things he created, so he made documentaries to show them off. Or Americans refuse to use the metric system as propaganda by tall men because we're over 2 meters. We're not 2 meters tall, but we're over 6 feet tall. Yeah, so I don't know. I have a conspiracy that, yeah, it doesn't matter. That's not a conspiracy. That's fact, and I'm not going to bring it up.
So most people on the height thing, I think this is very interesting. And I want listeners to chime in. In other countries, is it common to give your height in centimeters or meters? I feel like centimeters is more common, right?
I don't know.
It is.
Okay.
And I can say that because I spend a decent amount of time on Reddit, and when people are like, I don't know which size bike to buy, and they post their height in centimeters, I'm like, I'm too lazy to Google this conversion. So, but from watching pro road racing, I've gotten really good at doing meters to feet for climbing and kilometers to miles for distance. So,
also, I want people from other countries to chime in. Is there a thing like we have in the U.S. where every guy says they're 6 foot tall when they're clearly not? Is there something like, I'm 181 centimeters, but they're really not? I'm just curious. Because 5'11" is 180 centimeters, roughly. And 6 foot is 182-ish. Just curious.
So if you're in another country and you have input on that, go to our web contact form at jraShow.com and send in your take on that question.
Dang, I'm 188 centimeters tall.
Or are people like, I'm 2 stone? And they're like, no, you're not. You're 1.9 stone.
I think stone is a British thing.
And stone is weight, Kenny.
I know. Just saying. Is there a metric equivalent?
Also,
I don't think
someone would brag about weighing 28 pounds. that was a pretty bad one, Kenny.
Yeah. Well, clearly I don't use stones in my day-to-day life.
All right.
That's all we got for listener
questions. Is there an SI measurement for stone? Is there like the original stone that's in a vacuum container thing?
Probably.
I wonder.
I better pull up patrons.
Well, while you're doing that, I'll tell you.
Oh, and Kenny has to do is how to drive.
Oh, yeah. How to drive a fucking car.
All right. I don't know what episode of How to Drive a Fucking Car this is. Is that important?
No, I just
not
make up
all.
A number.
So today's installment of How to Drive a Fucking Car, we're going to go with engine brakes. So we live in a pretty hilly area. I want to introduce people to that little stick on your steering wheel, could be in your center console, could be a little digital beepy boopy button somewhere else in your car. It could be
paddles.
It could be a Dodge truck, for example. And that's a joke. You know, maybe you've accidentally put your car into park when Nickelback comes on the radio or something.
Taylor Swift hot jam comes on and you put it. No, no. Because park is all the way to the left. So I guess it would be like, yeah, Taylor Swift.
Well, yeah, you're trying to turn that off, and you accidentally park your car on the interstate. because you thought it was your volume button, but it's really your drive selector. Anyway, so I want to introduce people. There's other driving modes of your vehicle other than D. And when you're going down a big ass fucking hill, you should try them. It might be like a 3 or a 2 or a 1. Some cars are a B. Open up your fucking manual, click around on your little clicky thingy, and try that shit out so that you don't burn your fucking brakes to the ground and boil your brake fluid and send your car into oblivion and kill a whole shitload of people. And also just go through brake pads like a demon. The amount of people going down the big ass hills in our area and all you smell is full on fire brakes is. So try your fucking engine brakes. It's an amazing thing. Most of the hills around here, I can literally click it into a mode and I don't touch my brake, period, for the entirety of the hill. It's phenomenal. You should try it. That's it. That concludes this episode of How to Drive a Fucking Car.
All right. It's a good one. So our patrons, starting at $10 a month or more, we have Kurt, Skunk in Your Trap, Jim the Fucked Up Trike Guy, Burt Reynolds Crusty Stash, Zozo, Eric, Burt Reynolds Mustache, Taper Bore Pro, My Pal Dal, MTB Shenanigans, increased my level again to allow unhinged names like
Mike Jones,
Cam Irish One, Tennessee Zach, Green Giant, AJ, Leland, Mista Bombastic, Ride Time Extended, JC, Gordon, Josh, Fart Noises, Chipset Coffee, We Caffeinate Colorado, Ryan, Bill, Aaron, Shay King, The Caffeine Queen, Ty, Noah, Cool Beans.
She nasty.
No, my name is Clayton, Frank the Tank, Goat Roper, Balls, Professor Triple X, at $11.11 per month, Haywood Jablomi, Patamillion Disco Ball at $14 Australian, and at $20 a month, Ridge Runout Gravel, presented by Andrea's Hormoning Podcast. Scott, Joe, I Want a Mustache Ride from Burt Reynolds, Poop Wrench at $26.06 per month. Some people have guardian angels. I have a raccoon with a crowbar whispering, let's make it worse. Harley at 30, Troy at 31, and Six Pack Outdoors, purveyors of top shelf shenanigans and cycling events at 50. That's it.
All right, shut it down.
Okay, thank you all for listening, and good night.
Thanks for tuning in to the Just Riding Along Show.
There's some shit coming out of your brake pads.